Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein, and this is a responsible day for the 11th of Tishrei. Today we're going to discuss Rav Yosef Shaul Natanzon on a Heter Me'a Rabbanim. And the story is, this is from Shoel Umeshiv, so it's a great name, Shoel Umeshiv, who asks and responds. The Mahadura Kama, the first edition, the first part, Siman Kuf Yud Gimel, responsible number 113. In Tafresh Yud, which is the 11th of Tishrei, it was in 1849, he says he found, this is actually a little bit of an odd tshuva for Rav Yosef Shaul Natanzon, because many of his tshuvot, he talks about various things happening on various days, and they get these long, complicated tshuvot. I have an interest, I like the name of the book, and he was an important Rav in the middle of the 1800s in Germany. So I'd like to find more opportunities to learn his material and to learn from him, but his tshuvot don't so easily lend themselves to it, because they're convoluted isn't the right way, but they follow long trains of thought that are his train of thought, but that aren't so easily accessible. So I very often don't have the opportunity to do it. This one, he just takes up one topic, one issue, and deals with it all the way through, so it's going to be relatively easy for us to do it. I'm sorry, I said Germany, but it's not true. He was in Poland. He was born in Galicia, and he was the Rav of Lvov from 1857. He was born in 1810, and then he became the Rav of Lvov of Lemberg in 1857, and is an important, well-known Rav. In this case, he had heard of a psak, of a ruling by another very interesting Rav, who I once thought about writing a PhD dissertation on, and then didn't, because I think because just to say something a little embarrassing about myself, I think I was going to have to learn Polish, and I didn't want to have to learn Polish, and therefore I looked for another topic for my dissertation. But Rav Tzvi Hirsch Chayes, the Maharetz Chayes, had ruled in a certain situation in a way that this Rav Yosef Shaul Natanzon disagreed. The Maharetz Chayes was the Rav of a place called Zolkva, and there was a certain man in the town who unmarried a woman, and unfortunately she had gone insane. Now, it's hard to know from one generation to the next, from one time to the next, what we consider insanity, but in this situation, she was so insane she would walk around naked in public, naked and barefoot in the streets, and she would get wounded and she wouldn't care, and she would have relationship with men and not care, meaning she was, just promiscuous, and she couldn't speak, she couldn't have a full conversation, she couldn't speak in a way with the sensible. She was, unfortunately and sadly, insane. For the past 6 years, she had been institutionalized. Now, her husband has no wife. He has no home life now, and he also has children. He is poor. He works in a printing house, and he doesn't have a lot of money, and the children also have some kind of an illness that's not clarified, except that they need hot food all the time, and there's nobody there to give it to them. I think the answer is that his hours were so burdensome that he couldn't be the one to stay home, right? This is in a time when it was well expected that you needed two parents to run a family. One of them would go out and earn the money, and the other one would run the household, and there was no way to do it otherwise. He just didn't have anything to do, and he needed a wife. Now, I assume the meaning is he needs a wife for all the things in his life, and that part of it is that she would help take care of the kids. Not he has to get a wife so he doesn't take care of the kids. It's all of it together. He needs a relationship. He needs a marriage, because people like to be married. They like to be living in productive marriages. So the Maharetz Chayes, Rav Tzvi Hirsch Chayes, had said that in this situation, you don't even need. Now, here's one of the things that's complicated or that's problematic in our today consideration of marriage and divorce. It's clear to me in halacha that if people don't want to be married to each other, then they're not supposed to be married to each other. The problem is that theoretically, a man is allowed to have more than one wife, and a woman is not allowed to have more than one husband. So theoretically, the man could simply marry another woman. By Torah law, the man could have simply married another woman. That's not been true for hundreds and hundreds of years. It's a cherem that I think academics say wasn't Rabbeinu Gershom's, but was attributed to Rabbeinu Gershom. So sometime soon after the 11th century, it was well accepted that Ashkenazic Jews for sure did not marry a second wife. However, there was also a tradition that if there was a situation where the man really had the right to marry another wife or should be able to get married, and there was some problem that he couldn't divorce his current wife and we wanted to be able to get to marry. Now, many people object to this today because they feel like it's unfair, because there's no such out for a woman. If a woman is married to a man and really deserves to get out of the marriage but we can't get her out of it, there, it's a complicated, hard situation, and we're going to have to leave that for another time. We're not going to solve that today. I'm just noting it so it doesn't seem like I'm glossing over it. In the case of the man, since by Torah law, he could have had a second wife or a third wife. He could have multiple wives. When the Scherem, when this rule became known that we don't marry, that Ashkenazic men do not marry more than one woman, there was an exception in situations where really he should be able to get out of his marriage, but for some technical reason he's not going to be able to get out of his marriage, that he could have 100 Rabbanim agree, and these 100 Rabbanim have to be from three different countries. So especially, if you think about the 12th century, this was a very burdensome requirement, but even in the 1800s, it was somewhat of a burdensome requirement still. To get to 100 Rabbanim in three different countries would take time and effort, and many people didn't have that time and effort. Certainly, we can imagine that a man who works in a printing house and has little kids is not going to have an easy time finding 100 Rabbanim to agree that with a wife who is insane, there's nothing he can do for her because she's just insane, that maybe he should be allowed to marry a second wife. So this, Ratzi Chodesh Chayes had said, in this case, he doesn't even need the 100 Rabbanim. And he gave a couple of reasons. And among the reasons were, he found a Daikin Moshe who had said that the time of the Chayim Rabbeinu Gershom, this ruling that's attributed to Rabbeinu Gershom, that says that Ashkenazic men are not allowed to marry two wives, it was only supposed to last until the end of the Elef HaChamishi, the end of the 5,000 of the Jewish calendar. So let's remember that the Jewish calendar, we count back to, it's hard to know, but theoretically, to Brias Olam, to the creation of the world, and how we understand that today, I'm not getting into right now. But so what we say, if I'm sitting and recording this, I'm doing this, although this is for the 11th of Tishrei, you hopefully are listening to this on the day after Yom Kippur, the 11th of Tishrei of 5777. So that 5777 is 5,700 whatever years. So the thousands end at, on the English calendar, on the non-Jewish calendar, at the 40s. So the year 1240 was the end of the 5,000 of that calendar. That's when we started writing 5,000 before our dates. So the tradition was, this tradition was, the Cherem went only till the end of the 5th Elef, of the 5,000th year of the calendar, which would have corresponded to 1240 in the non-Jewish calendar. So Rav Tzvi Chodesh Chayes said, so from that time on, it's only a minhag. It's only a custom. He's not saying we can just marry whoever we want. He's saying that it was a formal cherem, right? It was a formal ban of excommunication upon anybody who didn't listen to it until the end of the 5,000. Now it's a minhag, and he says, and that's quoted that way in the Beit Shmuel and the commentary in Shulchan Aruch. So Yosef Shaul London says you can't rely on any of that because we have a responsive of the Ran, who's more authoritative than these later authorities. And the Ran says, simply understands it and assumes that the Cherem Ben Gershom is still in full effect, that we don't marry a second wife, even though the Ran lived after 1240. The Ran lived in the 1300s. So if the Ran's assuming that Cherem Ben Gershom is in full effect, that means that whatever this Cherem is, it didn't stop at the end of the 5th Aleph. And the Shulchan Aruch, the Beis Yosef, Rav Yosef Karo, noticed that, and he tried very hard to understand how it could be or to explain that maybe the Ran wasn't disagreeing with the Rashba. The Rashba was the one who had quoted this tradition that the Cherem only went until the end of the 5th Aleph, and maybe the Ran didn't hear about it, maybe didn't know about it. So Rav Yosef Shaul Natzon says here in Shaul HaMeishiv, he says even in the answer that the Beis Yosef gave, that maybe it's true that Rabbi Gershom only went into the end of the 5th Aleph, the 5,000, but then the Ashkenazic rabbis of the time, the Ashkenazic sages of the time, in the mid-13th century, they decided formally to continue the Cherem. But they didn't make clear that that's what's going on, because they didn't want people to say, oh, there's no more Cherem, it's just these guys, because they were worried that they thought that Rabbeinu Gershom's name was more authoritative than theirs, even though Rabbi Yosef Shaul Natzon is going to point out it's not true halachically. Chachmei Ashkenaz, who continued the Cherem, had the full halachic right to do that. They were just worried, he's saying, they were worried that people wouldn't realize that. And if people wouldn't realize that, you'd have a situation where people would be violating the Cherem, because they would say, it's not really the Cherem. Who are these Chachmei Ashkenaz? Who are these Torah scholars to think they can make a Cherem? Oh, Rabbeinu Gershom, he could make a Cherem. So because of that, maybe that's what's going on. If that's true, according to Beis Yosef, if that's the reasoning is correct, accurately, historically, Yosef Shaul Natzon says, then we still have in full force a full cherem, a full ban on having a second wife. And therefore, whatever reasoning, so if Rav Hirsch Chaya said, it's only a custom, and therefore in our circumstances we can ignore the custom, that whole line of reasoning falls apart. If it's not a custom, it's another cherem. It's a repeat cherem. It's a repeat ban of excommunication declared against anybody who acts in certain ways, because they too were the leaders of the generation, and therefore they had the power to create such bans. I'm sorry, not to create, he says, even if they didn't have the power of Gershom, they certainly had the power to continue such a ban. And then once the ban's in place, to say that we are going to make it continue and not fall by the wayside. Now, there is some question here in this situation. Rav Yosef Shmuel Nutzelson agrees that the woman had brought some of this upon herself, meaning we might give the husband more rights than usual here, because she hadn't told him before their marriage that she had had episodes like this before, and that she'd been institutionalized already once and then gotten better, and now she was out. But this time she's been in there for 6 years and was, you know, insane even before that. But that might give the husband more rights to ignore the Cheru Beinu Gershom. But the problem becomes, as Rav Yosef Shmuel Nutzelson now goes on to point out, that there's some discussion about, there's actually two parts to Cherem Beinu Gershom. There are many, but two that are relevant here. And one is, we don't divorce women against their will. That's one part of Cherem Beinu Gershom. By Torah law, a husband could divorce a wife against her will. He could just give her the get and force her to accept the get, and that would be the dissolution of the marriage. And the other one was that we don't marry, that Ashkenazi men don't marry two women at the same time. If we're going to be in a situation where we have to violate one of those, so let's suppose there's a woman, not our woman, who's insane. That's a whole complicated, that's a more complicated question, because when women are insane, they cannot receive gittin. Not because we don't want them to, but because halachically it doesn't take effect, because they don't understand what's going on. They're not able to comprehend. And that's a halachic problem. That invalidates a get. So too, an insane man cannot give a get, which creates problems that also are challenges. So in a situation, let's say there's a woman who's not insane, but she simply is saying, I'm not accepting a get. Which would we prefer to do? And we know that the husband has the right to be freed of this marriage. So which do we do? Do we have him give her the get against her will? That would be one option. And say, well, too bad. You know, if he can find her and, you know, and force the get on her in some way, it would be valid, even though the Cheru Beinu Gershom said we don't do that anymore. Or do we have him marry a second wife and ignore the Cheru Beinu Gershom that says you can't marry two women? Which do we prefer to do? So in order to be Huda Tshuva, in which he said that it's better to divorce her against her will. That's the one that we'll be lenient about, rather than marrying a second wife. And he had a proof from a Shutmaram Padua, he had a proof of that situation. He said it's better to divorce her against her will. Now, for our situation, that would hurt, because you can't divorce her against her will, because she doesn't have the understanding to accept a get. But in our situation, he says, it's also true, the Yosef Shmuel Nutzelson says, what if she gets better? So if she gets better, it's also worse to let him marry a second wife, because let's say she gets better, and then he can't force her to get divorced at that point, because she's a perfectly fine woman at that point. So he can't force her to get divorced. And the second one married him under no false pretense, no problems, no issues. You can't force her to get a get. And you might end up having a situation that he has two wives, neither of whom want to get divorced. They don't want to get divorced. We don't force them to get divorced. And you'll have a man actively married to two women, and that's going to be a problem. So therefore, Rav Yosef Shmuel Nutzelson says, to simply say we can ignore being a Cheru Beinu Gershom, he thinks that's a problem, because this, especially since, in general, we probably prefer, the Nota Biuda thinks we prefer, if we have to, ignoring the issue of divorcing her against her will to the issue of marrying a second wife. And secondly, allowing her to marry a second wife here could lead to all sorts of issues and problems if she gets better. Then he quotes another shoot that I've never really heard of, a shoot Gur Yehuda, who had also said that here there's another problem, is that even before the Cheru Beinu Gershom, the Gemara had spoken about not marrying two wives if you're not able to support both of them. And theoretically that would apply here as well, because we said this man isn't all that wealthy. So it could even be that it's not just the Cheru Beinu Gershom or a continuation of Cheru Beinu Gershom. It might even be a sort of application of Dina de Gemara, of Halacha in the Gemara. For Rav Yosef Shaul Nutzon also suggests another reason to think that it would be preferable to divorce women against their will rather than marrying two wives. Now, not that that's an option here, but that shows that we should take the allowing of a man to marry a second wife very, very seriously, because it's the more serious of the two charamim that we would be coming to allow. Meaning, he's just saying, the Maris guy said, it's just a custom, and therefore, in this situation where the man's wife is insane, we don't even need to force him to get ahead to marry a banim, he can just marry a second wife. Rav Yosef Shaul Nutzon is saying, that's a lot more serious of a problem than you think it is. And part of the way he's showing that is by showing that even among the charamim of Chayim Rabbeinu Gershom, within the bans that Rabbeinu Gershom issued, that are now being continued by Chachmei Ashkenaz, by the leaders of the Ashkenazi community in the 1200s, even among them, there's a level of severity, and I can show that the Chayim Rabbeinu Gershom, when marrying two wives, is of more severity. So if I'm going to start allowing it, I have to be very careful to do it. So Rav Yosef Shaul Nutzon's proof, is additional proof that that's true, is there's a Taz, I think this is actually a well-known Taz, but there's a Taz who says that for all the great powers that Chazal have, and Chazal have great legislative powers, right? We're not allowed to add to the Torah, but Chazal all do have the power to create protective ordinances for the Torah. Within all that, their protective ordinances for the Torah, the Taz had held that the Chazal don't have the power to prohibit that which the Torah explicitly allows. That's a claim in several places, that if the Torah explicitly allows something, then you can't disallow it. So when it comes to Chayim Rabbeinu Gershom, the Torah never explicitly allows us to marry two wives. It doesn't say, go ahead and marry two wives. It never prohibits it, therefore we assume that it's allowed. But, says Yosef Shaul Nutzon, he says the truth is that in our times there was a thought that maybe people shouldn't get married at all since we're in exile. This is the Gemara of Bava Batra on Samach Amud Bet that is a reminder of the impact of Gulz, the impact of exile, the impact of destruction of Churban once upon a time had, that unfortunately and sadly many of us have lost today, certainly in the non-observing community, but even a little bit in the observing community, the loss of the memory of the fact that we are in Gulz, we are in exile. So in the Gemara there's a whole discussion about there were people in the time of the Churban who couldn't imagine how to build lives, and they were tempted to sort of stop life completely. And Rabbi Yehoshua has this discussion with them and tries to show them that you can't ignore life. You have to live life, although you have to also remember the Churban. One of the things that came up there was that really we shouldn't get married, we shouldn't have children, because having children makes you happy and it builds a life and it's enjoyable. So the answer is you have to because of Piri Avarivya. You have to because men have the obligation to have children and to procreate. But there's no need to have a second wife. So it would make sense to say, even before Bnei Gershom, that in the time of exile, in the time of destruction, you shouldn't have a second wife. But to divorce against a woman's will, there the Torah says it explicitly, that even, because the Torah just says he'll give it to her in her hands and she'll get divorced. And it sounds like, regardless of what she's thinking or what she wants, so even though it's true, Rav Yosef Shaul Nutzon says, even though it's true, Rabbi Gershom had the power to do it, because the Torah gave the power to Chachmei Ador to say, in our times, we may need this or this or this. So he's not agreeing with the Taz that he couldn't do it. He's just saying, but the Taz's point that it was explicitly allowed in the Torah, which complicates the question of Chazal saying, we don't do this today, we're not going to allow it for now. So that means, he thinks, that when he does it, it's still a lower level of takana than the ordinance to not marry a second wife. So in all these ways, he thinks he's shown that what Maharatz Chai has treated as relatively light, relatively lenient, relatively unimportant, like a custom not to marry a second wife, he thinks is much, much more serious than that. And therefore, to say that you can do it without a head to marry a banim seems odd and not correct to Yosef Shaul Nutzon. Rav Maharatz Chai also said that in case where we're not sure if the cherim applies, then it's only halacha b'divrei kabbalah, it's only like a derabanan. If we have a doubt about it, we treat it like a derabanan. So the rule is that in divrei kabbalah, words from the Nevi'im, traditions from the Nevi'im or derabanans, if we have a suffix about them, we have a doubt about something where it applies, we have room to be lenient. That's what Maharatz Chai has said, because he said you treat a cherim like a derabanan. right? Because, and it makes sense because Rabbeinu, it makes intuitive sense because Rabbeinu Gershom was a scholar of, a great scholar, a leader of his generation, but a leader of generation in the 11th century. So, so that's a rabbinic kind of a thing. So he, Rabbi Yosef Shalot, says, I already have a tshuva somewhere else, and I have an unpublished manuscript on Yerodea. It's interesting that he would choose to mention it here, even though nobody has access to it, because it's an unpublished manuscript. But he has a manuscript, and he says in all those situations, he thinks it's not true. He thinks that a cherem is min ha-Torah. And therefore, whenever you have a suffix about it, you have to treat it stringently. It's just that the laws of cherem were left up to Rabbanan. Meaning, the Torah tells us that we have to follow charamim of Chazal. The Torah tells us we have to follow the rulings and the bans and the edicts and the of the rabbis. And therefore, he says that's a Torah law. And therefore, if we treat it lightly, that's a Torah law. So he says, but you say to me, well, but in Suffolk to Rabbanans, we don't do that. In doubts about rabbinic laws, we don't do that. So he says, that's because Chazal made a conscious choice. The rabbi made a conscious choice that even though there's a prohibition in the Torah called Lotasor, that we have to not stray from their rulings, not stray from their ideas, not stray from their laws, and that's a Torah law. And therefore, if we have a doubt about it, we have a doubt about whether we're fulfilling Lo Tasur properly. There, Chazal explicitly said, no, we want to treat ourselves leniently in this way. And therefore, we're not going to be gozer in that situation. And that's clear. That's in many sources. But says Yosef Shalom, that's not true of a cherem. When they make a cherem, they left it as a deoraita. We have no reason to think they changed it from there, and therefore you have treated it as a deoraita. So far he's trying to show that Rabbi Maritz Chai has treated this more leniently than he should have. What he should have done was treat it strictly and stringently and say, this is a cherem, and if we have a doubt about the cherem, it's a cherem, and therefore it can be treated as a doraita because it comes out of the power of Chazal to legislate things, and therefore we should have treated it more strictly, and therefore we have a challenge and a problem here with what to do about it. Maritz Chai said one more reason to suggest that maybe it should be allowed even without a heter merabanim. And that was because he says, you know, when she had relations before she was institutionalized, we said one of the evidences, one of the examples of her insanity was that she was promiscuous and she would, you know, go to bed with anybody who was interested in it. And that, in theory, counts as adultery. And it is true that a woman who has adultery voluntarily is not allowed to stay married to her husband. So if this woman has had relations many, many times, maybe that's a reason that she can't marry her husband anymore. If she can't marry her husband anymore, Maritz Chai, as it said, if she can't stay married to her husband, then maybe Rabbeinu Gershom's cherem didn't apply and he can just marry a second woman because this woman can't be his wife anymore ever again anyway. Problem with that reasoning is that she's not in her right mind. So to build this idea, you have to assume, and Maritz Chai knew this part, you have to follow, there's an Achron called Knesset Yechezkel, I think, who had said that she can't stay married to her husband because the Rambam had held that if a minor, right, remember that in the time of the Gemara and even hundreds of years later, it was possible for a young woman, a child really, under the age of 12 to be married off. That's a whole question as to how that worked, and there could be cultural issues and how we understand the nature of marriage and whether it changes from one culture to the next, and all those are sort of issues that people today get very offended by. I think there are plenty of ways to explain it in a reasonable way, but that's not our discussion right now. However it happened, if you had a young woman, a child, you know, on a child of 10 or 11, and she's married, and let's say, and this happens in America today, that children of 10 and 11 have relations with people. There are 10 and 11-year-olds who get pregnant, which means, really, they're no longer ketanot, they're no longer considered halachically children, I think. But in any case, that's a discussion of its own. So let's say a child like that, a young woman like that, has an adulterous affair. The Rambam had held that that's not considered against her will. It's considered that she consented. Right? Meaning that he's understanding her to have the enough mental ability to consent to sexual relations. Today, we call it, in many states of the United States of America, we call it statutory rape. Statutory rape means we don't believe the child or the young woman involved has the mental capacity to agree to these kinds of relations. And therefore, if an adult, if you know, a 20-year-old, an 18-year-old has relations with an 11-year-old, aside from the disgusting factor, we in America today very often will consider it a crime because he's done something against her will, and that's even if she says, no, I was happy to do it, I enjoyed it, I was interested. Question is, halakhically, how do we understand that? So if you have a woman who's married, a child who's married, she's 11, she has relations, or since she's not married, we want to know in the times of the Torah whether the man who had relations with her would have to be considered an ones mefat and have to pay a fine or whatever it is. Question is, whether it's considered against her will or it's considered that she agreed. So if it's considered she agreed and she's married, she can't stay married to her husband. The Rambam held that you can consider it she agreed, although many had problems with that, didn't understand what he could mean by that. But the Maharaj Chai said, if it's true of a minor, it's going to be true of this woman who's insane. Yosef Shalom says that's not true at all, because in the case of a minor, the question is if she has enough dot, if she has enough understanding of what's going on. But in the case of a shota, of a woman who has sadly gone insane, the question is whether she has enough dot. The question is that whatever dot she has, whatever understanding she has, is all mixed up and all messed up, and therefore doesn't have any of that context to it. So he rejects that as well. But Maharaj Chai had said, maybe we can say the husband's never going to be able to stay married to the second woman, and to his original wife anyway, because she's had adulterous affairs, and therefore he can certainly marry somebody else. But it comes, you say, no, it's not true. I think those affairs don't count, because sadly she wasn't in her right mind. So therefore, he has all these problems. Certainly, though, he agrees, if he gets a het to marry a bunny, that he's allowed to do, right? If you have 100 rabbis sign on that he should be allowed to marry a second wife, that's a well-established way for this man to find a second wife. Then, one last issue that comes up is what he does about giving a get to the original wife. He had written, or Maharaj Chai had written, that he should be mezakeh her get. So mezakeh her get means there are very, very rare occasions where we can, even if the woman isn't around, or even if the woman is saying she doesn't want it, we can appoint a method, not that she acts as if she doesn't want it, if she's not around and we can't find her, we can appoint a messenger for her and give the get to the messenger, and we can say this get is certainly to her benefit and therefore it takes effect. That's what it had sounded like Maharaj Chai had said. So the classic example of that is, let's say a woman was married to a Jew for a while, and then she left the marriage and she left religiosity. So she left religiosity, and she's left religiosity, and she's now, you know, let's say living with a non-Jew or living with other Jews. She's gone someplace else, and she's living in another place, and she's not observing the Torah, and so everything she does now is adultery. So in that situation, very often, there are times when we'll say it's a zchut for her. It's really for her benefit that the husband divorces her. It's not his benefit. It's her benefit. And therefore, we'll allow him to appoint a messenger and to give the get to the messenger, and it will take effect. Maharaj Chai said, sounded like that's what he meant to do here. So Rav Shlomo Zalman says, first of all, it's a problem. It's not clear that he can do that, because it's not clear that she's able, mentally able to accept the get. And if she's not able to accept the get, it's not clear that you can appoint a messenger for her, even if it's to her benefit, because it's not clear that messengers can do things which the person who putatively sent them on this mission had wanted them to do. So that's a complication. Zolstri says here that in this case it's not to her benefit, because if he's not married to her, he might decide he's not obligated to provide for her, but he is obligated to provide for her. So that's a problem as well. And therefore, and there's all discussion in the Achronim Bell, so they're not going to get into now, but therefore, Rav Yosef Shlomo Zalman says to know clearly what he's supposed to be doing. He's supposed to be being Mishalish La Aget. Mishalish La Aget means he deposits a get for her with the Beit Din, with the court, and if she gets better, then she can accept the get, and the get will take effect. The truth is, at the time, we also make him swear that if she gets better, he's going to give her another get. So Yosef Shalom Zalman is actually not completely sure as to why he bothers with this get. I think he thinks it's probably just because it'll make it easier to be sure the husband will then give another get if she gets better, because there's already a get out there that she could use if she had to, but we'll probably prefer to write her a get at that end time because of things like him supporting her until then and things like that. So these are some of the complications that come up when even everybody understands and agrees that this poor man is stuck in a situation that's not of his doing, that's not his fault, and that we really need to help him, we want to help him. It can be complicated because we have rules in place and the halacha follows the rules that it follows. So Rav Zvi Hirsch Chayes had tried. He was an innovative thinker in many, many ways. He had tried to think that there was a way to help this man without going through what was a burdensome path to find him a way to be able to marry another wife. And Rav Yosef Shaldonson is saying is we can't rely on that. It doesn't work. It's not a sufficient way of doing these things, and it's not going to take effect. And so it's based on saying, even if Rabbeinu Gershom, there's this rumor that Rabbeinu Gershom, it's not clear. The Rashba reports it, but a part of what I skipped over in reporting too is that nobody's really sure where this rumor came from. But there's this rumor that Rabbeinu Gershom's Kerem only applied till the end of the fifth Elef, the end of the till around 1240. If that's true, it's no longer effective. As Shlomzer points out, we don't accept the idea that it's not true, because even if it were true, the scholars of the time, the Torah scholars of the time, had agreed to extend it, to continue it indefinitely, so therefore it's still in effect. It is the more serious of two haramim that we have in this situation, between divorcing her against her will or allowing a second wife, and so on, is all the ways that we saw. Some of the issues that come up in trying to find ways to help people get over hurdles and challenges that are presented to them by various situations. And one of them was Rabbi Yosef Shaldonson on the 11th of Tishrei trying to help a man find his way back to a married life after his wife has sadly and unfortunately gone insane. I wish you a good day, and that we don't face these kinds of challenges in our lives, and we have lives that are smooth, and that it turns out that the chatimah that we had yesterday be for a life filled with all the good that we want. Have a great day.